Hey everyone, welcome to our new show, Wild and Unprotected. I'm your host, Ethan Lehman, and I'm here with my co-host, Koji Somalde.
Hey everyone, welcome to, like Ethan said, Wild and Unprotected, a podcast where we will be diving into conservation efforts and people alike to really just uncover who they are as people. If you guys are interested in any of this type of content, stay tuned because this is our first episode and we're really excited to bring the show to you.
Yeah, Koji, we got a good one today. We're bringing in an old friend of ours, Maria Harvey from Hawaii Uncharted Research Collective. We did a project with her, our first piece of content under the Wildscape banner. Shoreline Stories Episode 1, we went out to Hawaii and spent some time with her. And in today's episode, we're going to catch up with her, see how she's doing, see how Herc's doing, and then let her let loose a little bit. You know, show a fun side of her that most people don't get to see. They get to see a lot of the scientific research and conservation that she does, and now we're gonna let her off the chain a little bit. Have some fun. Hope you guys enjoy
the show, guys. So Maria, thank you again for joining us on our first episode of Wild and Unprotected. You know, we want to do things a little bit differently, but I'll just go ahead and start, you know, like tell us in the audience a little bit about, you know, what is Hawaii Uncharted? And, you know, we can piggyback to that as a second part of the question of, you know, what has Hawaii Uncharted accomplished since our shoot back in April of last year in 2022?
Yeah. So thanks for having me, Koji. Good to see you again and speak with you. So Hawaii Uncharted is a 501c3 nonprofit. We're focused on researching whale sharks in the state of Hawaii. So we're a group of scientists. We work with collaborative other organizations as well, trying to further the understanding of these endangered animals in Hawaiian waters, and then thus helping out how to understand the species globally. So when you can figure out a little piece, it adds to the bigger piece, right? So conservation worldwide for this species is very, very important. They're endangered. They've lost about 50% of their population in the last 75 years is what is thought. And we're trying to understand the puzzle that is the Hawaii animals that we're seeing and where we can help out with that global conservation picture.
I love that.
Yeah, to the second part of your question, what we've done since we've seen you last in Hawaii. So thank you guys for coming out then. But we've been focused on a lot of the data side of things. So we've been processing data. We've been catching up on all the submissions. We've had the most amount of submissions that we've had since starting HERC these past 5 months. And we've had over about 70 different submissions. So we're trying to process those. And then we've also published our first paper, which is a kind of overview of whale sharks in Hawaii and what we found from the first 4 years of data collection.
Yeah, it seemed pretty busy on social media. I think every other day I'd see a story or a new post of, you know, a new sighting or an entirely new animal that's been spotted, naming opportunities galore. It seemed like it's been a pretty busy time for you guys. And yeah, I know you sent me over that paper that you guys had gone ahead and done and published, which congratulations on that. That is awesome. Tell us a little bit more about that. That's freaking amazing.
Yeah, so our paper was published about a month ago in Marine and Freshwater Ecosystems, which is a journal, and we were able to, you know, have that as a collaborative paper with a couple other scientists as well. So it just goes to show that globally, you know, pulling in all these different experiences from different locations.
So do you want to redo that? I think we should keep that in.
Your phones, please.
Let's keep that in. Let's roll with it. This is Wild and Unprotected, episode one, where things are getting wild with the ringtones.
Wild with the ringtones, yeah. So just to give you a heads up, so not only am I the director of Hawaii Uncharted, I also work doing whale disentanglement, and I have the hotline right now, so I do have to monitor that as well. So if the
is that a call that you have to take right now?
No, that was on my personal cell phone, but something that comes in on the hotline, I will have to answer during this, but...
Well, go ahead. We will keep that cut in the podcast, showing that, hey, this is a 24/7 job sometimes when you're in conservation and you're working with animals, because animals don't care about what time it is, what day it is, or what month it is. If there's an issue, it's anytime.
Mm-hmm. That is so true with whales or whale sharks. So something that combines the two species that I work with is one of the threats to whale sharks and whales, one of the major threats, which is entanglement. So I work as a disentanglement responder additionally to my HERC side. And that is something that we have been seeing here in Hawaii, and that's something that is affecting whale sharks, and it's kind of unique to our location. So we have seen what we've had reported is about 8 different whale sharks that have become entangled. We don't know if they're becoming entangled here or elsewhere. However, the gear that they are being wrapped up in is very, very thick. Sometimes 5 to 7 inch hawser gear is what it looks like. However, we've never been able to get our hands on that. We do have documentation of these. However, we don't know where it's coming from or where they may be coming entangled. So it could be something locally or something elsewhere, which is what partners with our satellite tagging program, which is something that ongoing project that we're doing. And what we're trying to do is understand where these animals are moving spatially and temporally to understand how to protect them in the long run.
Yeah. What kind of damage do the animals sustain when they become entangled?
It can depend on the type of entanglement, the configuration. So sometimes this thick gear can add a lot of drag to the animal, can start to embed into their body, especially if they're a younger animal and still growing. But a lot of times with these whale sharks, what we're seeing is so much gear that it's creating a lot of drag on the animal, and that can affect it in the short term and the long term. But the animals that we have been able to get free, you can already see where it's cutting into the body, where you're seeing indentions in the pectoral fins, things like that. So it can easily cause death to an animal. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but it is a high possibility that it will over time.
So it's one thing, you know, to have your hotline, you know, just at ready to answer at any time and, you know, end up on a rescue mission. But it's another thing to have, you know, like you were saying earlier, new data coming in from people submitting. Can you piggyback a little bit on what you mean by submissions for the audience that isn't, you know, in tune with being able to provide the proper channel of, hey, we see this happening. How do we, you know, tell this organization that? Because here in Florida, it's the Fish and Wildlife. You know, we hear something happening on the beach mm-hmm. a mile away, and we go check it out and we call Fish and Wildlife. And, you know, we could have a ranger there within 5 to 10 minutes, you know, but with, you know, Hawaii being so vast and the terrain, and not many people have resources like that. Can you tell us a little bit about how important these submissions are?
Of course, yeah. Thank you for asking. So Hawaii Uncharted was started mainly as a citizen science project. These animals here in Hawaii, they don't congregate like other locations. So our sightings are very opportunistic. So what we decided to do was create a website where people could go to it quickly, submit the animal that they've seen, the location that they're seeing it, and photos or videos. If the animal is entangled, we started a hotline, which we answer 24/7, that they can call us. And luckily, based on my other experience and my other type of work, which is whale disentanglement, we already have kind of a response network set up on different islands where responders, trained responders for whales, we're now working on that for whale sharks, but HERC is leading the charge on that. to get trained responders out there to hopefully be able to get to the animal quickly and then work on getting it out. Now, with that, it is very different than whale disentanglement aspect because whales have to come up to breathe. That allows responders to work on them. Whale sharks do not. So what we've been doing is actually working on designing specific tools that we can hook onto the entangling gear of the animal and let it swim away with drag, and that will eventually cut through the gear. Kind of like a flying tool is what we call it. But it's hooked on, the humans can back away, let the animal swim away with it, and then there'll be a buoy or flotation that will pull that knife to the surface once it cuts through the gear.
Yeah, I think we did see an example of that tool on our field mission when we joined you guys last April. That's incredible, though, you know, being able to respond to something just like in the blink of an eye, because it could be life or death for an animal like that. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here in Hawaii right now, our resite rate of these animals are about 12%. So if you can't get to these animals quickly and are able to respond quickly, you may not see them again. So we want to really act on that. And that's why we have the submission form that's easily available in mobile or desktop, and also the hotline that people can call us at.
Well, we're going to give you your first opportunity here to have a little bit of the fun and the wild piece of it. I feel like we're at a good transition point for that. Are there any absolutely insane whale shark or whale disentanglement stories that you can share with us?
Well, we have a funny whale shark story recently from a recent tagging event. So we were placing a mini pet tag onto a whale shark. And unfortunately, the whale shark was around a fish farm area, which is an area of high productivity. There's a lot of food in the water, so it attracts a lot of different species. So we were getting ready to place the tag onto the animal. But there also tends to be a lot of other sharks in the area. So there can be Galapagos sharks, there can be silky sharks. And the whale shark decided that it needed to use the bathroom at that time. So we found ourselves in the middle of a fecal plume from the whale shark, which is not small by any means. And when whale sharks are in areas of high productivity, they don't always break down their food. So sometimes the food passes through, and the other sharks decided to surge towards the surface to get that food that was not processed. So now we found ourselves in a little Sharknado fecal plume.
Fecal chum.
With other sharks zooming past us really fast, and in our GoPro, because we wear a GoPro on our mask, all you can hear is us cursing very loudly and trying to get the heck out of there. That was not a spot we wanted to be.
Is that like an ultimate whale shark eat moment, or eat my dust, literally?
Yeah. I think he was trying to say something.
Oh man. I think we can chop that one up as a pretty good story.
Yeah, that's a great story.
I couldn't imagine going to a local university and speaking with, you know, future marine biologists and being like, you know what, this is what life could be like. You could find yourself in a whale shark poop tornado with other sharks swimming around you. And yeah, that's your life. That's going to be your work environment here every once in a while. Yeah. So enjoy.
Get ready for it. Yeah, you never know what you're going to end up in.
Yeah, expect the unexpected with that sort of thing. And I'm sure, you know, like when you first got started, that's not something that you ever expected.
That was not something I had planned on, no.
And that could have been, you know, way worse. You know, imagine, you know, a breeding situation and that happens. Or there's, you know, like with just that many sharks, especially in deep blue water, I can't even imagine. But no, that's incredible. You know, just to go back to what we were talking about earlier, you know, so thank you for diving in a little bit into Hawaii Uncharted and you know, telling us what your intentions are there. I know that, you know, us three, we have a good rapport and we know where your head's at. But for the audience, you know, can you kind of explain what your future goals are and kind of some of the biggest challenges that you're facing with these goals that you have set forth?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for asking. So what we're trying to do at Hawaiian Chartered is basically get a big picture of the animals that we're seeing here, where they're coming from, going to, and how we can protect them for the future. I already, you know, kind of mentioned that these animals are endangered. Their population globally is declining. And we want to see how we can protect them in the future for the Hawaii aspect of that. Right now, they are not protected. And that's something that we would like to see going forward. That can take many years. So what we're trying to do is continue to collect this data, continue to collect sightings, looking at the satellite tags, continue that to see where they're coming from, going to. And we're also looking on a genetic level. So we're taking biopsy samples. So hopefully that can give us a picture from a genetic level where these animals are connected to different populations worldwide. Because that whole picture coming together will allow us to say, look, these animals are either here or they're moving, and we need to protect them either way. They're an endangered animal in our waters, and we need to take steps to conserve them.
What does that look like from a conservation perspective? What does protecting these animals, whether, you know, it's through a government standpoint or social citizen standpoint, what does that look like?
So a couple different things. I mean, from a government standpoint, that would be laws that are put in place. What we try and do is offer voluntary guidelines based on kind of accepted guidelines elsewhere or laws elsewhere in other countries, and kind of shift that for Hawaii. Those guidelines are available on our website. It's just making sure that you don't touch the animal, don't dive, don't change the behaviors. But what we see a lot are people trying to get in the water and take that social media shot that everyone wants, right? And social media can be used for good. It can be used for real good, getting the conservation side out of it, out there, getting people to see these animals in their natural habitat. But unfortunately, there is a dark side to that. And when they see these photos, they're like, oh, I want that same photo too. And without protections in place or guidelines being established, that can create a downturn. And these animals often will get touched. They'll get grabbed on by their dorsal fin, and people will go for a ride. We recently had a video sent to us here in Hawaii that a person got on its face and was surfing it. While their friend was recording. And it's really unfortunate because then these animals exhibit behaviors where they take a fast dive, and now we've changed their natural behavior. Maybe they were up on the surface trying to feed, or maybe they were trying to warm up, or it could be a number of things. However, when we change those behaviors, that's when we're now affecting them negatively, and we don't want that.
Yeah, I know that's something that we talked about in our Shoreline Stories episode was, you know, these stress behaviors that the animals are exhibiting is inhibiting research drastically. You know, you may lose, you know, that one sighting of an animal that was used to going up and feeding in a certain portion of the water column, and now it doesn't want to. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's nervous, it's scared, really reprehensive. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. want to surface like it should. Or exhibit that natural behavior. And that's sad. I know nothing really upsets me more, especially when it comes to whale sharks being my personal favorite animal. There's nothing that upsets me more than seeing, you know, images of a tourism-based boat that's parked directly above the animal. And you just see people jumping in on top of the animal when, you know, they're 10 to 15 feet below the surface and people are jumping in on top of it. And you just see feet, you know, come down and are getting close to the animal. That's incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially because it doesn't take that much to change it. You know, the voluntary guidelines that you had spoke about, they're not that difficult to obey, and you still can get an experience with the animal, which exactly. is the crazy part. You know, you can jump in from, you know, 100 feet away, and the animals are so massive in scale that you don't lose a lot of that experience. Yeah. It's never, you know, it's never a good idea to ride of animal's dorsal fin, you know, unfortunately mm-hmm. speaking from experience, you know, something mm-hmm. that I learned, personally, out where Koji and I are from, with dolphins that'll come up to you, you know, bottlenoses that'll come up to you. And as a kid, you're like, oh, this seems great. You know, grab mm-hmm. the dorsal fin and hang on. And next thing you know, you're potentially hurting the animal, or you're in deeper waters than you're capable of swimming in. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can still get that same level of experience, which blows my absolute mind that people are still doing this. And, you know, from the flip side of things, I really hope that if the government does step in, that they don't remove that experience entirely. You know, something that we had talked about before was what we're seeing with different dolphin species now in Hawaii, where you can't even get near them. I would hate for, especially tourists, since Hawaii is so tourism driven, I would hate for, tourists to lose that potential experience, because that encourages, you know, education on the animal. That encourages, you know, further learning, and, you know, potentially some child, you know, or teenager who's with their parents on a trip to Hawaii, you know, on one of those boats, that might determine their life path. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that there's a balance that's found between, you know, the guidelines that you guys have set forward voluntarily, and if the government were to get involved, that it's actually beneficial to both sides of the coin, both the human portion of it and the animal portion of it. Obviously, you know, the animal taking priority over that, but I'm really hoping that, you know, there's lessons that are learned from research like what you guys are doing. And there's lessons learned about how, you know, sometimes there's an overstep when it comes to, you know, government regulation. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a happy medium that's found, you know, for the true benefit of conservation as a whole and for these animals.
Exactly. And that's what we want. We want that happy medium. We don't want it to be shut down altogether. Like we say, that is the way conservation moves forward, is to get people to care about these animals. And a lot of times that happens through seeing them in the wild. So that's not something we just want guidelines to become formal guidelines. So people have a process. Western Australia does it really well. And they, you know, they have had those laws in place for a long time. And that's a lot of what our guidelines are based off of.
Yeah. Out there. Is it called Igaloo? Is that where
it's called Ningaloo Reef.
Ningaloo. Okay. Yeah. I follow quite a few, photographers that are based out of there, and honestly the way they interact with the animals seems pretty perfect. I mean, it shouldn't be too much of a heavy lift for, you know, an organization to present, you know, some sort of citizen bill to the Hawaiian government to say, hey, listen, like, we have exactly what we need just mm-hmm. right here. What ways do we need to move forward to implement this kind of stuff?
Yeah. And, you know, as a nonprofit, we try and present the science side of it. And then hopefully they'll take cues from other countries and organizations to kind of follow along with the guideline side of that. So we try and present, hey, these animals are here. They're here year round. We're seeing more and more of them come in. We're getting more and more submissions. Now it's time to take that step and get these guidelines out there.
Yeah. And, you know, I like what you said earlier, Maria, about mm-hmm. Social media, you know, having, you know, it can be used as a force for good. Right. But unfortunately, there is that dark side, you know, and mm-hmm. putting these guidelines out there and, mm-hmm. and getting them supported by other conservation efforts and people across the globe, and just piggybacking, you know, like what Western Australia is doing. I think that could be, you know, one of the best foundational tactics to get people aware, really, because nowadays everyone believes everything they read or see on the internet. You know, and if it's, you know, something like Hawaii Uncharted putting out an incentive to say, hey, if you spot a new whale shark that has never been identified before, you could name this whale shark, perhaps, you know, and how are we going to be able to do that? Mm-hmm. How are we going to be able to do that if, you know, we aren't protecting them, or there are no guidelines to protect them? So I really resonate with that, having that social media side of things being used as good. So for you out there riding whale shark faces, stop mm-hmm. doing that. For everyone, please stop doing that.
Yes.
Please. Yeah, that's like, let's just, we're not even going to beat around the bush that one. That's not cool in any way, shape, or form. I know you go out to Hawaii, you think you're going to hang 10, not on a whale shark, please. Yeah. That's not cool. Stick to surfboards, stick to longboards, yeah. Shoot, stick to boogie boards for you people who can't stand up. Just don't do it, please. Yeah. Not on an animal.
That would be great. And you know who you are. You saw the video.
Done. Yeah. I think it might be good to overlay the video.
Yeah, we'll drop that here.
You are absolutely being put on blast.
What not to do. You know, it's one thing to go to Hawaii and, you know, have fun and, you know, go see the different sites and do the different things, eat all that awesome food and meet amazing people, and really let loose. That brings me to my next point, you know, like how would someone on a field mission or someone in a research mission, like working with Herc, really let loose and enjoy themselves on perhaps a longer mission where it might be more than a week or up to a month? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you could see someone doing to let loose on a trip like that.
You know, research missions, whether it's with whale sharks or whales or anything, you know, they can be long. You're in the sun a lot. And it all comes down to who you're with. You know, there's always interesting conversations that go on and, you know, people start to get a little kooky after a little bit of sun and not enough water. So, you know, we just try and let loose by being ourselves. Humor is always a huge help when you're out there. You know, pranks, we do pull a lot of pranks when we're on the water. And
oh, any examples?
Oh, you know, there's always the classic, just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch or, you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
The classic. Yeah. I mean,
we'll tell regular people listening to the show, like, hey, you know, we would love to have you guys out and meet some of our guests. Just beware if you're, you know, if you packed a Lunchable and you're eating it on the side of the boat, there's a chance that you could get pranked with their classic.
I know. We always have to make sure now that no phones are in pockets. You know, you have to be like, where's their phone? Where is it at? Things like that. But,
there's a new job requirement. Your phone must be waterproof.
Yeah, phone must be waterproof before we can push you in. But no, I mean, it's you're mainly focused on the science, but it's always fun with who you're with, how you pass the time, the conversations you have, and the community building. You know, we have a lot of interns that come out with us, and, you know, kind of mentoring them and letting them go forward. And, you know, continuing to build relationships that we have within, you know, ourselves that we work with each and every day. So, you know, I think what I've always said, I've worked on boats for years, and the people that I work on boats with, it's the closest friends I've ever had, is because you just get so close because you spend so much time out there and there's nothing to distract you. You just have good, meaningful, deep conversations, not just about the animals, but about life in general.
Gonna poke a little fun at myself here from our field mission. You hit on it earlier. When you have too much sun and not enough water, bad things tend to happen. And this would be kind of a great little point to tie in our Shoreline Stories episode with this. I unfortunately did not come well prepared for our field mission. I think we were out there for what, 7-8 hours that day. And my dumb thought it was a great idea to not have a shirt on most of the time, and did not understand the absolute harshness of the sun out there. There is no shade, there's no place to hide, so you can get burned a little bit. And I was burnt to a crisp for probably 3 days, to the point where when we finished up our trip out to see you guys, I'll never forget, it was a couple hours before we hopped on the plane and we decided to fit in, you know, one more beach morning. And I was literally on the beach in a hoodie pretty much completely closed. And had some interesting interactions with people on the beach, talking about what I should and shouldn't wear. But have you ever been burned that bad, or know of anyone who has been burned as bad as I was that day? a newbie, that should be almost hazing.
Yeah, I mean, you were pretty lobstery. I think you could blend in with a brick wall. It was you definitely had a good one there. I mean, I'm not far behind you. My dad's a redhead, so I got the skin tone. So I I understand. I you know, a lot of scientists, the more you spend time out on the water, the more you cover up. You know, a lot of us wear these SPF shirts with hoods. We have buffs. Like, you can't see any skin when we're out there because we just spend so much time out there. So you unfortunately understood that the hard way. But maybe I'll send you.
He thought he was going to the beach.
And the crazy thing, I've been on the water my whole life. You know, literally been on the water at the beach my whole life. Never had an issue with that. I mean, there are days, and Koji can, you know, keep me honest here on this one. We used to have volleyball tournaments in high school where we were out, you know, on the beach, out with no shade, nothing, at like 5 a.m, you know, making sure everything would get set up. We'd go through our volleyball tournament. And before we know it, it'd be like 4 p.m. Never had a shirt on, never went in the shade, and I'd be fine. One morning on a boat in Hawaii, and I look like I just got pan-seared and I'm about to be served at a restaurant in Honolulu. Absolutely ridiculous. So yeah, I learned that lesson the hard way, and I will not be doing that again. And there will be remedies for that with special SPF 50 shirts that I have in the making to never go through that again.
Yeah, we'll send you a Herc one as well.
Yeah, and needed at this point. My gosh. Yeah. I want to go on more research missions, but I don't ever want to feel like I can't sit back in a plane seat again and I have to look like a Disney animatronic.
I'm sure people around you thought it was hysterical.
Oh, I'm sure they did. If you heard some of the stories, and one woman's story in particular, they were enjoying it, watching me walk around in a hoodie on the beach like an absolute idiot. It was embarrassing, but I guess, you know, all those embarrassing times lead to really good stories that you can laugh about later on. I think I'm mm-hmm. still hurting, but, you know, we'll get to the laughing stage eventually.
I think the best part, though, was our manta ray tour we took, which you have to do at night. And it's right off the coast in pitch black water. And we go out there and Ethan gets in the water. Mind you, we'll keep it short. You know, they give you like, you know, they give you wetsuits to wear. But, you know, we go and find our spot. We find our spot of manta rays where they're doing their roles, which only happens off the coast of Hawaii. And Ethan gets in the water. I swear he probably only lasts like maybe 15 minutes. And we're holding on to this, you know, like a boogie board with a huge floodlight in it. And he's right next to me. And our other guy, Brian's next to us. And Ethan's probably got like 10 minutes in him. And next thing you know, I just see him swim away. And he's like, dude, I'm done. I can't do it. My skin can't handle it. And he goes and sits on the boat wrapped in a towel for the remainder of the trip. I felt so bad, man.
It was so bad. I really wanted to take in as much of that manta ray experience as possible because, you know, that's a learning moment for me. You know, I'd gone through most of a marine biology degree before, you know, starting this program up. And, you know, that was basically the catalyst for wanting to work with, you know, conservation efforts because it's something that I'd wanted to do. So my whole approach to that was it would be a great team building exercise and I would be able to, you know, see animals in their natural habitat, you know, and maybe even study a little bit, you know, even though it was, you know, kind of a touristy thing, there was still a lot of studying to be had because it's something I'd never seen before. And so I was absolutely over the moon excited for this. And the moment I got in the water, the contrast between my skin being so hot and burned and how cold that water was at night literally shook me into the most violent shakes I think I've ever had. Like I was in charge of GoPro footage for that night and I had to pass it to Koji within 60 seconds of being in the water, like just trying to stay in the water and enjoy the experience. And it just got to the point where my skin was so burned that I was like, I gotta go in. So yeah, that was pretty bad. That was the lesson after the lesson. I had already gotten burned and then I faced the consequences of, you know, not protecting yourself correctly on the water to not get burned because you lose potential experiences after that. And that absolutely sucked. That was unfortunate, mm-hmm. but I will never do that again.
Well, you'll just have to go back then. You'll just have to do it again, not as a sunburn this time.
Yeah.
Moral of the story.
Yes, definitely. And I think if we continue to build our programs up here at Marina Shore Media, I think there will be a lot of time spent on the water as a group, whether we're filming, you know, whether we're doing live shows. I think there's going to be a lot of time. And you and I have discussed this on the side personally. There's no place I'd rather be than Hawaii. That feels like home to me. That's easily, you know, my happiest place. That's why we chose Hawaii Uncharted to dive into. So I think there'll be plenty of opportunities and a lot more learning to be done.
Yeah. Well, and the cool thing about that manta dive, if you get to do it again, is similar to the whale sharks, those spots that you saw on the underneath of the animal when they would barrel roll in front of you, those spots are unique to each animal, just like the spots that we use on the left side of a whale shark. So keep that in mind next time you're in the water and not shaking violently and taking video.
Yeah, I would like to identify who Darth Vader is. Be like, I've seen you before. I was shaking violently, and I'm pretty sure my eyes weren't ever focused, but I've seen you before.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing. You know, Captain had all of those manta rays. He knew exactly who was who, identifiable by just, like you said, all those spots. And then there was one manta ray, bless her soul, with a cleft chin. I forget her name, but it was adorable seeing her chin. It was like deformed in a way, and she was graceful. I will say she was graceful, and I still have all that footage, which I need to send over to you, because that stuff is amazing.
Yeah, there's a few manta rays with that cleft chin, or you know, missing part of their body, and one is named Lefty. I don't know if that's the one you had, but unfortunately, a lot of times
they were there.
Lefty was there.
Her name was, I believe, it started with a G.
G. I'll have to look. But I know several of them have lost part of their bodies due to fishing line entanglement. So it'll cut that off. And, you know, a few of them are still around eating and, you know, being, you know, manta rays at the night dive. But, a lot of those injuries are from entanglement.
Man, that just goes to show you how rampant entanglement is. And, you know, this material that is left in the oceans and waterways of all kinds, that, you know, it affects not only whale sharks, a keystone species, but many, many mammals and sea life. I think people really forget, you know, to pick up their trash and, or, you know, just don't have the means to do so.
Yeah.
But I try to at least leave with a bag full of trash anytime I go out and just do my part. You know, I think it's so important, especially when it could be, you know, like the plastic straw. Mm-hmm. Just one plastic straw a day, or, you know, cans, or what are the little rubber things that hold all the six pack of cans together, you know?
Like, oh yeah.
It's huge for dolphin entanglement. So it's just one of those things, you know, just doing your part every single day. Yeah. I know that's one of my biggest experiences, just being out on the water, as an outdoorsman myself, is seeing how much we have impacted as humans every single environment that we come across, whether it be, you know, 1,000 miles away from civilization, you're still going to find a Coke can. Mm-hmm. And those type of experiences kind of hit home, because if it's not our generation to combat that, then do we expect the next generation to do that?
Yeah.
So it's one of those heavy topics, but I think having the platform to talk about those things is super important.
I agree.
But as we wind down, Maria, I know we've talked about a lot. We've dove into a lot of embarrassing things, Ethan. and, you know, as we get towards the end, I just want to know, maybe, you know, can you tell us what your favorite experience working in conservation with HERC is? You know, you've been at this for a very long time, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen a lot of things, met a lot of really awesome people, and if you can account for one of your favorite experiences, what do you think that could be?
Yeah, something that might encourage someone to want to start an organization or go into conservation or become a marine biologist. You know, what's one of those stories?
I mean, with HERC or with whale disentanglement, I think it's always when you see the animals return that have been cut free of entanglement. That's always a huge thing for me. Because that means they're back into the population and continuing on. You know, I have tons of whale stories of seeing, you know, animals that have been freed again and they're coming back with a baby.
I could bet that's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. And you know,
do you feel like a proud auntie or something like that?
Yeah, you do. You feel like a proud auntie. And then you get the call and then you got to go do it all over again. But with whale sharks in general, I think one of our biggest steps, and something I'm most proud of, and one of my, you know, favorite memories recently, is, you know, creating that new knife that we're going to use for entanglement. I think it's something that's very promising and something that we're testing. And I think, you know, whether we see that animal again with that 12% recite rate or not, knowing that that gears off, that animal's likely going to survive. So, but just anytime you get to spend in the water with an animal, whether you're tagging or doing a biopsy, a lot of times you're in the water by yourself and you're getting to spend time with such a magnificent animal and a keystone species and something that's endangered. And who knows if the trend is going to continue to decline or not. But it may be something that our children or our grandchildren may not ever get to see. So just being able to spend some time in the water with species like that is so incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'm going to cry. It's important. It's important, that feeling. And you can tell you're passionate about it. So thank you. Thank you for sharing these stories.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it and giving us the platform. And, you know, hopefully, if anyone's interested, they can reach out to us too through the HERC website.
Yeah, well, I think that's a perfect transition here. Why don't you throw out ways to contact you guys or have a way for someone to reach out and see what you're doing?
Yeah, so our website is hawaiiuncharted.org. You can reach out to us there through the contact us page. We have our emails on there or through our social media. So we do have Instagram and Facebook. We are kind of, trending more towards Instagram as most people are, but feel free to reach out to either. And we work with interns that handle our social media now, gives them a platform to start to get involved, and they send it to us. So whatever's easiest for anyone to reach out to us, they can do social media or our website.
Yeah, that's awesome. That is awesome. Well, I think that's a good point to wrap up this portion of the show. Thank you so much, Maria, for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And I guess I'm going to head back out and start building the fence for the other critters I rescue.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you again, Maria. Once again, guys, Hawaii Uncharted, Maria Harvey. If you guys need to see this video or listen to this podcast, we'll be coming out with it soon. And of course, we have a whole episode that dives super deep into what Maria touched base on today with Shoreline Stories. And you guys can find all those links in our bio and everything. So thank you again, Maria. It was nice having you on the show. Thank you for being our first guest.
Thank you. Thank you, Ethan. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.
Wild and unprotected, planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Nature's sexy, we need these